Suzette Boulay here with Regia Joy Green of A Course in Miracles Society, and we're here to talk about a very inspiring and inspired story. It was written by my brother Mark called Deep Waters, and it was about a particularly difficult time almost 10 years ago when he was having troubles with one of his children, Danielle, who'd run away from home. And this story that we'll be talking about is completely true. It opens with Mark mentioning how his daughter had run away and how he'd received a call from a detective in Kentucky, and they'd found a girl that met his daughter's description, and as they knew more, they'd let Mark know more. And, of course, this threw him into a deep, deep panic. When he went to sleep that night, he was having trouble sleeping and fell into a very profound dream, the dream which resulted in the story Deep Waters. And the entire story is about his journey to find his daughter, and it's about the wisdom that he finds along the way. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful story, and we'll talk about it more in a couple of moments. But before we delve more into the story, I want to give a little background about what led to this moment here, right here tonight, why we are on the air. And let's just say that my friend Ginny Gennar and I have a Course in Miracles class that we teach on Sunday mornings in Peoria, Illinois, and when it's my turn to teach, I always try to bring in quotes or beautiful music. Sometimes I've played Marianne Williamson. She has some different iPod sections that are on the Oprah Network. And there was one time when I was on the internet and fell and stumbled across the most beautiful music and most beautiful melodic voice talking about the Course in Miracles principles and the different lessons, and come to find out this gentleman's name was Moss, because I had written the contact person, and it ended up being Regia Joy, and I wrote the contact person and said, is there some way I can download this beautiful melodic voice and play for it in my class? And she said, absolutely, but she gave me the technique how to do it. And Regia, I think you'll say that we have struck up a friendship during these last couple weeks and months. She told me she had newsletters, that she had blogs, that she has been very, very involved in the Course in Miracles since, I want to say, early 1980s. And then in our friendship, it occurred to me, I said to her in an email, Regia Joy, would you be so kind and consider reading my brother's beautifully inspiring and inspired story, Deep Waters? And she said, well, certainly, just send it my way. And Regia, if you don't mind, I'd like to hand it over to you. I sent you the story, and perhaps you can share what your reaction was. So how do I give the mic over to you, Regia?
Okay, I think I have the mic. And how's the volume for everybody? Is it good? Not too high? Perfect? Great. Good to hear. Okay. Yes, Suzette and I have become really good friends, and I only heard her voice for the first time, I think it was yesterday. But we have so much in common, and it's just been wonderful. And I know we will meet someday in the 3D, but so this is wonderful. I'm so happy to be here tonight and to be reading this story. Suzette sent it to me, and I read it, and I put it in the pile of things to perhaps put in our newsletter. And, you know, I think I gave it a very cursory reading the first time. And when I was reminded of the story and pulled it out again, it really knocked my socks off. And I've read it now several times, and each time I need to warn you, I don't know if I can get through without crying. It's so beautiful. And it's not only moving, but I mean, it really hits home to the truth about our freedom and the choices that we make in life and our fears. So I'm going to hope to read it tonight and get through it without crying, but forgive me if I do. What we were thinking that I would do is I would read the story, and there's a short epilogue afterwards, and then to our surprise and joy, Maz has recorded something called A Father's Prayer. And we have that recording, and Dub is going to play it. So at the end, when we get done. So now, while I'm reading this, if you would just watch what comes up for you, any comments, please write them down. So because we'd like this to be interactive, we'd like to share the mic with you. So if you have any thoughts that come up, feelings that come up around this story, please write them down and bring them forward. And also, as we said, the Fare for the Amazing Grace bus, as you'll see, is what is your greatest fear? And I know that when I asked myself, I had to ask myself, because we are going to tell you what our greatest fears are, Suzette and I. I haven't heard hers yet, but have to tell you, when I asked myself what my greatest fear was, I did start to tear up, and so that I knew that that was it. And I haven't even told my husband yet, who's sitting here, but I want you to think perhaps of what your fear would be when you get on this bus. What is your greatest fear? And what we want to move toward is a healing, and is perceiving that in God's light. I'm just going to ask Suzette if there's anything else she wants to say before I begin to read. And I'm just going to hit this. Suzette, let me know.
You're fine, Regia. I think we're ready to hear the story. Can you hear me? I'm just going to, as you can see what my writer fan says here, this is a story about what to do with our fears and who to give them to, and we are giving credit to the author, Mark Boulay. So, Regia, she's all yours.
Okay, thank you. This is Deep Waters by Mark Boulay. Several years ago, when my daughter Danielle was a teenager, our family was experiencing some very deep waters. Danielle had run away, and for over a month we didn't know her whereabouts. Then one Friday night, I received a call from the detective assigned to the case, saying that a young girl had been spotted under a bridge in a small mining town in the hills of southern Kentucky called Upton. They were following up with the local authorities and would call me with any developing news. I had just spent the better half of the afternoon posting flyers with a picture of Danielle, with information about her age, 14, her weight, and her hazel eyes. The flyer included the pathetic sentence that no parent wants to see: "Have you seen our daughter?" Late that night, after having difficulty falling asleep, I fell into a profound Wizard of Oz type of dream. In my dream, I was driving through the small towns of Kentucky in the middle of the night, stopping at the one-stop burgs and gas stations, all the time getting deeper and deeper into the mountains in the coal mining areas, but having no luck on finding the small town of Upton. Come morning, by chance, I pulled into a larger town that seemed to be more important, centrally located business and residential area of the region. I spotted a small public park with many benches and a large fountain with a Confederate soldier on a horse with water spewing out of the horse's mouth. I was so exhausted from my night search that I laid down on the bench to get some rest and renew my strength so that I could begin my search again. I was half asleep and groggy when the two worlds of sleep and wakefulness, when about 8 a.m. it appeared the Confederate on the horse had come alive and was sitting on the bench with me. He looked like Robert E. Lee with a white beard and a winter hat pulled over his full head of hair, as it was chilly in mid-October. His deep, sparkling blue eyes had the mischievous look of a child who was playing hooky from school and held some hidden secret. As I became more fully awake, we began the first of many conversations. I told him I was on a mission to find my runaway daughter, and I was looking for the small town of Upton, Kentucky. He shook his head and told me he did not know where that town was, but not to worry. "Worry," he said, "is a byproduct of the ego's desire to control all things, both understood and not understood." He continued, "People who are ego-driven leave a spiritual odor that makes them hard to be around. Choose to replace your fear with trust," he said with a twinkle in his eyes. He went on to tell me that he was a part-time, semi-retired professor at a nearby college who loved the interchange between, or with, aspiring young minds, and taught several night classes. I asked him what he was doing on a bench so early on a brisk October morning, and he replied, "I love to observe people going to their work to see if they are following their bliss. Or are they just large gerbils running hopelessly on the treadmill of life?" "How can you tell this so early in the morning?" I asked him. During this time, many people stopped to say, "Good morning, Professor." And I deduced he was both popular as an instructor and well-known, having taught several generations in the city. He answered, "Watch the next person I say good morning to and observe that person's smile." I noticed he was doing this to every passerby like he was the mayor or practicing for the local Walmart greeter job. After a few more people passed by, I commented, "It looks like everyone is quite happy to see you as you greet them, and they smile back like Christmas is coming and you're Santa Claus." "Ah," he told me, "you are looking but not seeing. You are focusing on the surface of appearances while I am looking into other people's souls by the light I see in their eyes. The joy in one's soul brims over into the eyes like pasta bubbling on the stove." I observed the next few people much more closely as he smiled that mischievous smile and greeted them with, "Good morning." As the people went past, they spoke in varying monotones of certainty. "Have a great day, everything's fine," they said, as if they were wind-up dolls or mannequins with pull strings. I could see very little light in their eyes, and I began to feel a burden for them. He told me that the whole human race is living under a master illusion that has enslaved the entire world. He explained that the illusion is so subtle, few people see it or are aware of it, because it appears to be good, like a mirage in the desert when people are dying of thirst. I was becoming more awake and had the sense to ask him, "What is the master illusion that makes the world a giant insane asylum?" With a look of glee in his eyes, he explained, "The master illusion is that you can find happiness by getting. Everything is slanted to that desire, all pleasure for its own sake, all greed for power or control or possessions or security, to obsessive desire to find love or things to fill the illusion of want. All advertising and greed in the corporate climb feed this illusion like rats that are fed grain on the treadmill. Come with me," he told me. "We'll go for a walk, and I'll show you something interesting." We took a stroll through the neighborhood, and I felt great comfort to be in the company of such a wise soul. I saw fewer and fewer people as it was mid-morning, and all the exhausted parents were working on the treadmill of life, trying to provide all things that bring happiness, even though it was crushing their spirits to keep running. "Look around you at all the beautiful homes," he said. "What do they have in common?" I looked up and around. "Well, they're all flying beautiful flags that are blowing nicely in the brisk wind," I said. "Yes, but what do you notice about them? Be aware," he insisted. "That is the first characteristic of an alive person, awareness." I thought it was interesting that there were no American flags, state flags, or University of Kentucky flags. But they were all quite colorful, blowing in the breeze. "You are starting to wake up. Be observant," he said. "What do you see on the flag of this house?" "It looks like a raft going down a river with oars coming out the side," I replied. "Yes," he answered. "The man is a junior accountant, but his bliss is to have a business with tourists rafting down the river. At the next house was a flag with a guitar and drum set. The man worked at a local factory but loved music, wanted to entertain people, but was trapped with mortgage and credit card debts. The next home had a flag with coffee cups and books on the flag and was owned by a woman who wanted to have a small coffee shop and bookstore with Mozart and Beethoven symphonies playing in the background as a way of reaching out to people." On and on, he described how each flag was an outlet for a desperate inner expression of people's repressed desires to follow their bliss. I decided it was time for the critical question. "So all the world is searching for happiness by mostly beating up other people emotionally or brutally in the workplace or home to find happiness that does not exist?" He stopped walking and looked me in the eye undoubtedly to see if I was alive or not, and shouted, "All babies, Buddha babies." I stopped in my tracks and said, what about babies? You're losing me. Please explain on a lower level so I can understand. All babies, Buddha babies. Means all are entitled to find enlightenment and true happiness in this life, he said. Happiness is not a matter of acquiring more things or people, but an awareness to let go of everything you think you need to be happy. He went on to explain that most people are worms crawling on the earth, begging for fickle approval and a desire to melt anonymously into the crowd just to belong. He continued, when you let go of all your programmed desire for happiness, your balloon of awareness begins to rise and you see all things differently from the aspect of freedom. As you rise in freedom, you become more aware of the happiness that has been inside you all along. Think of the couple who live in a log cabin in Alaska where it's dark and cold for many winter months. The windows of their cabin become covered in smoke and soot and grease, and it remains dark inside the cabin in the middle of spring. The light is shining brightly, but they live in the darkness of illusions. Clean the windows, he exclaimed. Let the light shine in. He continued, when you find your freedom and happiness, you can rise to the joy of bliss. How, I asked, can anyone rise that high on his own power? No one can rise that high on his own power. But God's love is the wind that is looking for souls to lift up, he replied. Each day is a choice, he said. In your first morning prayer, say, create in me a new heart, O Lord, that I may love unconditionally and forgive absolutely. As you rise in consciousness, you will begin to see the unity and sacredness of all life, just as astronauts in space see no boundaries between people. To summarize, I said, so we are born happy, but fill our souls' windows full of the junk of the world of illusion and desire, and it's a matter of detaching from these false illusions and following our bliss in loving and forgiving others. The kingdom of God is all around, he assured me, but few see it. Wake up. We had walked for quite a while, and it was later in the day. I couldn't believe how time had flown. I was like a sponge soaking up this man's wisdom and was so mesmerized. I nearly forgot my mission to find my daughter as we returned to the fountain with Robert E. Lee horse spewing water. We sat on the bench for a few minutes, and I had a feeling he was going to watch the poor rats come home from work, heading home to gaze at their bliss flying from the flagpoles. But instead he said, it's time to go home. I have classes to teach, and you have a bus to catch. He put his hand on my knee and gave it a little squeeze, saying, close your eyes and say this mantra over and over until the bus arrives. You'll know when it is here.
Okay.
He told me to breathe in deeply, like I was pulling the universe into my lungs. And as I breathe out, say, the Father and I are one. He told me to continue this practice until I felt inner peace and in perfect accord with God, the love vibration of the universe. As I boarded the steps to get into the bus, I realized my friend, my guardian angel, my Buddha, had gone, but I knew my place was to be on his bus. As I stood before the bus driver to put some change in for the fare, he shook his head and said, this bus does not take money fare. He then reached into his pocket over his heart and pulled out a round wafer that looked like a combination of communion and papyrus, about 5 or 6 inches round. He handed me the disc. As he opened his jacket, I could see a wince of pain in his eyes, as it looked like he had pricked deeply into his side or heart with what looked like a sharp quill used to write in the old days. He said, write down your deepest fear and give it to me. Your deepest fear is your admission to this bus. I stopped for a second as the pain began to be pulled from my heart's deepest secret. Tears welled in my eyes as I began to write, and I could see tears Well, in his deep, gray, all-knowing eyes also, as if he knew exactly what I was going to write. Slowly, I wrote these lines, appearing in faint blood ink, blinking the tears away. My deepest fear is to be called in the middle of some cold winter night to drive to an unknown city in a faraway place, cold and alone, and scared to death to identify the body of an unknown child who is in a morgue or hospital. As I handed this wafer to the bus driver, and he tucked it into his pocket over his heart, I could see his eyes were filled with compassion and love for me, and I could feel his heartbreaking burden. I could feel this heartbreaking burden be scoured from the depths of my heart. I looked up for the destination of the bus above his head, and all it said was, "Amazing Grace." As I took a couple of steps, I saw the bus was overflowing, and there was no place to sit. I turned back to the driver, and he said, "Yes, we are quite full, but I have saved you a seat in Section J, Aisle 3, Seat 16. You will be sitting next to a beautiful child I picked up early this morning under the bridge in Upton, Kentucky." My heart was uplifted in gratitude and anticipation as he reached into his pocket and he pulled out another written wafer. The words looked like they were written in dried blood also. "This was the fear she gave for her bus fare," he told me. "My worst fear is this. If only you knew where I have been and what I have seen and done and who I am, you could never find anything to love in me." "My child," the bus driver said that he told her, "I know where you've been, for I was beside you the whole time with my angels surrounding and protecting you from all harm. And I know the things you have done to dull the pain of your inner demons from which I have set you free. But most of all, I know who you are, my beloved Danielle." And that concludes the story as it was written by Mark. He wrote it years later, as Suzette had said. He said he felt as though it were a stone in his shoe. He had to get it out. And then he did share it with Danielle. And as an epilogue, I would like to just quickly, a two-minute epilogue. This will put everything into perspective as well. After my daughter's eighth arrest for breaking the rules of house confinement, I went to visit her on Christmas Eve at a local juvenile detention center. We were in a small room with a large picture window, and it began to snow quite heavily, with flakes the size of quarters swirling in a free fall of freedom. And I could feel Danielle's pain that evening, as I was soon to go out into the beautiful evening and taste the snowflakes on my tongue while she must spend the night behind bars. As Danielle explained to me later, this moment behind bars was an epiphany in her life. She said God put these words into her consciousness: "I have set before you life and death. Choose life." She was given the chance to choose life, as she was subsequently sent to a girls' school to continue her education under supervised conditions. Danielle went on to finish in the senior class, top 10 of her local high school, and then, following graduation, attended a prestigious college where she made the dean's list with straight A's. Danielle finished with a degree in psychology, securing a full-time job in Montana, and will eventually work with troubled children. And just before Danielle graduated, this is, Mark wrote this, "I had a vision during meditation of her walking down a dirt road with her backpack on, seeing messages on the telephone poles every half mile or so that would guide her on her path. I wrote down each of these messages and put them into a prayer." The title of the above story is Deep Waters, and it comes from the prayer that I wrote for Danielle titled A Father's Prayer. And the specific line from A Father's Prayer that inspired the story reads, quote, "May your prayers leave a cloud of incense rising behind you for the angels to find you when you go through the deep waters of life." Well, this prayer was written last spring for my 22-year-old college graduate. My spirit has continually prompted me to write this story, the vivid dream I had when Danielle was 14-year-old troubled teenager, and all our family entered deep waters. And Deb, I was wondering if you could play the Father's Prayer by Maz.
A Father's Prayer. Set your mind to be happy in the present moment. This is where God resides. Your ego would have you live in the past, which is subjective regret, or in the future, which is projected anxiety. True freedom is like catching the sun on your face in the spring. It is embracing the life of awareness. May you be fearless in your journeys, both outward and inward. Have the courage and patience to face the silence. That is where all the demons of craving, attachment, and codependence are understood. And the power of your inner truth sets you free. May compassion be your walking stick, always by your side, to see all of life as a sacred gift of God. May you reach enlightenment, choosing to live each day in forgiveness of yourself and others, and in unconditional love extended to each person God sends your way. May your prayers leave a cloud of incense rising behind you, for the angels to find you when you go through the deep waters of life. Gold for praise, silver for thanks. All other prayers are prayers of unawareness of God's constant, loving provision. May each of your heartbeats bring a thought to mind a million times a day. I am loved. I am loved. I am loved.
Thank you, Dove. Thanks so much. It's really beautiful. Right now, I'm going to give the mic over to Suzette. She has some additional background information about the story she'd like to share. And then we'll go on from there.
First of all, thank you, Maz, for that beautiful rendition of the prayer. I'd like to just give a little background that in May, when my niece, Danielle, was graduating, I got a call from my brother, Mark. And just by the tone in his voice, he says, I'm going to be sending you a prayer that I wrote for Danielle for graduation. I'd really like you to read it. And I could just tell by the tone in his voice there was going to be something about this prayer. And so when it came in the mail, written in his handwriting, he doesn't type, he doesn't go on the Internet. So when I read this prayer, I knew. It's like there are times when your spirit knows. I said, my God, this is my brother's gift. This is a prayer that I've read a lot of them. I love the prayer of St. Francis. There are lots of good prayers in this universe. But that prayer, and I'm looking at it right now, every single sentence of that prayer stands alone, and yet it works together as a composite. And there are times, even to this day, I'll think, I need to remember to set my mind to be happy in the present moment. This is where God resides. How many times my ego wants to live in the past, which Mark calls subjective regret, or in the future, which he calls projected anxiety. Line after line, I knew that my brother's gift was the gift of words and the gift of spirit, and my own spirit said, you do anything and everything to get his word out, because it is not the word of Mark, it is the word of God. So I have made a commitment, and I'm seeing that dream realized right here tonight with all of you, and my brother's in the audience, he's listening. He doesn't do computers, he can't type Word documents to save his life. But that's fine. And when he sent me the story, when a couple months later, he did say, he says, I've had this stone in my shoe. It's I've had an impression on my heart to write the story that prompted Danielle's graduation prayer. So when he sent me in 10 pages the story Deep Waters written in handwriting, not typewritten, there wasn't a scratch. There wasn't a change. There wasn't an arrow. Edit here. There wasn't an X out. Go to other paragraph. This completely 10-page handwritten story was completely inspired. Not a change, not one thing. So as I'm typing the story, I'm with you, Rija. When I'm typing the story and it's time for him to get on the bus, I got the lump in the throat and the tears are coming down my face, and I'm typing that story for my brother Mark because it's the word of God. And I just felt so spirited. So why this has a Course in Miracles flavor, and why I wanted to bring this up as a background, that after the story was typed, and I sent my brother a number of copies, we decided together, well, we've got to get some feedback. I mean, he's my brother, and I'm his sister, and he had said, you know, you of course you love it, but you're my sister. Let's be realistic and try to get someone with a little more possible neutrality. Could you take it to your Course in Miracles class? So I did. I had copies typed up and copied off, and I gave it to the members of the class. And people read the Deepwater story without the epilogue hadn't been written yet. So they read this story, come back next week, because I handed out at the end of Course in Miracles class. The next week, people say, I love that story about Danielle. What is the rest of the story? You know, what happened? What happened to Danielle? So this is where my friend Mary Tanton, and some of you may know Mary Tanton. She's been a Course in Miracles teacher for over 30 years, and she's a retired English teacher. And she's the one that said it needs a tie-in. It needs some sort of epilogue. So Mark went back to the drawing board, wrote an epilogue, and we must give Mary Tanton lots and lots of credit, because then she took the Deepwater story, then she took the epilogue, and then she took the prayer and did just the type of editing and indentations, and if someone was speaking, she did the quotations and moved them down to the next line, but she was the editor. And I was the first typist, so on a very, very small scale, I teased Mary and I teased Mark. I said, if this was an inspired work, which it was, because Mark claims very clearly the Holy Spirit put the words into his head and heart, and they flowed through his pen. Mark was kind of like the Helen Schuckman. I was the Bill Thetford that typed it up and was encouraging about getting the word out. And our very dear Mary Tanton was like the Ken Wapnick and his team to edit the material and get it ready for publication. So that's where the background comes into play. What we're interested now is hearing your thoughts. Regia and I were thinking it would be delightful that some of you could say, what parts of the story did you like? Are there parts of the story you didn't get? Is there anything at all you'd want to know more? Mark has a question. He asked when we read the story at Christmas time. He said, who really is the bus driver? So there's a question for you. Does anybody know who the bus driver is? So with that, I'm going to let go of the microphone, and if someone would like to raise their hand over here and give a comment, or Regia, would you like me to pass it on to you? What's everyone's flavor? I'm letting the microphone go.
Okay, I'll pick the mic up, but what I'm going to do is just look at the list and see a hand go up. And I know even if two hands go up, we can pick. I would just love to see a hand go up. Any thought that you'd like to share, something that came up, something that you loved about the story, or something it brought up in you? And as we said, you may want to reach down and see what your greatest fear is. And then also, as Suzette said, who is the bus driver? So we'll just give it a few moments to see if somebody braves the waters and puts their hand up. I'll just say a few things while we're waiting for that hand to go up. and if it doesn't, that's fine too. I mentioned that David Hawkins, there's a YouTube that is out there with David Hawkins. It's on worry and suffering. And David is so funny, if you've ever listened to him. And he asked this woman, she's a worry wart. And he said, at one point he said, are you eating? And she goes, oh yeah. And he goes, well then you're not worrying enough. And he gave her some homework. He just said, turn up the worry, you know, to the point where she's not eating and sleeping. Because what she was doing is she was resisting. And he said, what you resist persists. Where have we heard that before? And so he said, there needs to be a willingness to surrender to the suffering that you're worried about. You need that willingness to surrender and let it go. He said, picture the worst possible scenario and then surrender it, let it go, and then ask for help, ask for guidance. He said, you want to choose the suffering. You don't want to resist it. And that's what we find hard, of course. I mean, the ego, you know, wants that all our suffering comes from the ego. And so I don't see a hand yet, so I'll go ahead and share.
We lost.
Oh, they can. Okay, great. Okay. Not sure when. Yeah. Okay, so does anyone want to let us know what their fear would be? In getting on the bus, that's your the fare is you have to write down you know, what your greatest fear would be and give it to the bus driver. What would you write? And okay, so I'll go first. My greatest fear is that my twin sister will pass on from the 3D before me. And there you have it. So I guess death is a pretty big fear.
How's that stuff working?
I guess death and loss is a huge, huge fear. Now, what would that mean if she did pass? She wouldn't be here in the 3D, but when I stop resisting that thought and I give it over to the Holy Spirit and I ask to see it differently, you know, God is the light in which I see. And if I can see that differently, then there doesn't have to be massive incapacitating pain around that. What I can do is, yes, grieve, you know, if that were to happen. I definitely could grieve for the loss in having her in the 3D. But in my being, I would know that this is not it. This dream is not it. I know that who she is and who I am will never change. Nothing real can be threatened, and I believe that with every part of my soul. And I know that death is not the end of life. I know that it's eternal, and that it she goes on. Yes, absolutely. In fact, someone had written in the text, it says here, Mark, the writer of the story, he said, if you lose your sister, she will visit you in dreams. And you're so right. In the dream within the dream, you know, I do see, I've had visits from my mom who has passed. And I am very, very close to my father who has passed as well. So that was my fear. I think it's just, not wanting her not to be here so I can extend my love to her. But I would invite someone to share. We don't have too much time left. Perhaps Suzette would want to share her greatest fear. Let me give the mic over to Suzette. And then we still want to encourage anyone with either your greatest fear or just comments about what we read tonight. And, share your light. We just love everyone here in the room and just want this to be a sharing. Okay, here you go.
All right, can everybody hear me? I thought I'd just have someone say yes if they can. All righty. My worst fear may seem a little esoteric at first, but as I explain it, this will kind of show you what an ego I have and how deep it can go. But there's a line from the Course in Miracles that says, I will never forsake you, but I must wait as long as you choose to forsake yourself. My worst fear is that my mind will play tricks on me. It's like my deepest fear is that I'll never get over my deepest fear. My deepest fear is that I'll sabotage myself so that whatever fears I've got, they'll endure. My worst traits will endure. It's as if I know. There's a knowing in my brain, my mind, my soul. There is a promised land. And like Moses, I thought, how the heck long is it going to take for me to experience the promised land? Because this whole book, Course in Miracles, says that you can't teach a universal theology. But what you really want is the universal experience of God's joy, God's love, God's peace. And so I want that peace more than anything in my life. I want to know that. But I'll never forget, and this is the first time I've said this to anyone, and it's the first time I've said this publicly. But in the Course in Miracles class, we talk about the 50 Course Principles, and we use Ken Wapnick, who's a Course in Miracles expert for my family. You may not know Ken Wapnick, but he's a Course in Miracles expert who writes about these wonderful, beautiful Course principles. And what he had said is, it says, it seems to suggest in the Course in Miracles that even when you pass on from your body, when you pass on from this life, you take your consciousness with you. There's a Peter, Paul, and Mary song that says, oh, my all my trials, Lord, soon will be over. And we sometimes think that when we leave this body, all our trials will be over. Ken Wapnick insists and suggests that in the Course in Miracles, that is not the case. We take with us all of our consciousness, and until we surrender, until we give over to God our fears, and no one really did quite say, no one really talked about who they thought the person on the bus was, but the bus driver. My brother Mark has a dear affinity and devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and it's Jesus who wants us to give our fears, and he will take them in his own heart, and he will take them on the journey to amazing grace. And I think that's a lovely, beautiful symbol. So just to make a long story short, which the ego never wants to make a long story short, it'll talk and talk and talk about itself, which I don't want to do. But there's a little axiom that came to me, came to me in my own mind that said, and I believe this, when my thoughts serve my body, I feel self-conscious. When my thoughts serve my mind, I sometimes feel anxious. But when my thoughts serve my spirit, I feel liberated. So when I'm in this deep fear mode, and I don't know if I'm ever going to overcome my worst traits, I say to myself, the mind that serves spirit is invulnerable. So I must remember to completely trust. There's a line in the Course in Miracles, and I'm looking at the book right now, that says, the children of God are entitled to the perfect comfort that comes from perfect trust. Until they achieve this, they waste themselves in their true creative powers. And you can make yourself uncomfortable by inappropriate means. So, and I'm on page 22 of the chapter 2, the separation and the atonement, in the text. So that's paragraph 5. The children of God are entitled to the perfect comfort that comes from perfect trust. So absolutely, perfect trust, trust in God's way, trust in God's will, trust that God is purifying us with all things. That's what I have to remind myself, because I do know, a capital K, capital no, that I will overcome, but my ego is the one that wants to sabotage me and keep me enchained and enslaved. So that's my deepest fear, and if the writer fan, that's it, Vinny. Vinny's my little man. You got to trust. Perfect trust brings perfect comfort. So that's the point, really, of a lot of the Course in Miracles book. Trust the process. Trust that you will find your way. Trust that we know God's will for us is our happiness. So when I come back to that first statement that I started with, I will never forsake you, but I must wait as long as you choose to forsake yourself. I want to not forsake myself. All right. This is writer fan is writing for my brother Mark. The false self is an illusion. Mark says, walk in delight. So isn't that kind of sweet? We have a vicarious writer here. The writer Mark is joining us via Vinny, via a computer that has no microphone. So I'll pass that over to you. How about you, Dove? Would you like to say something? I'm trying to get rid of the microphone here. How do I de-click the microphone?
Okay, I see my brother Glenn Paris has his hand up. I wanted to give Carla Joe, who was here this morning and spoke to you, and you spoke to her, and she, of course, takes courses with Bob Draper and with Ken Wapnick. She wanted to leave her greatest fear with you. Her greatest fear is she's going to be the very last one to get it. That's her greatest fear. She wanted you to know that. So I'm volunteering that. And I'll give you my greatest fear. And what's laughable about it, of course, whatever your greatest fear is, you attract. So my greatest fear is I'm going to be publicly embarrassed, and that happens here all the time. So with that, turning this mic over to Glenn Paris, who wants to share his greatest fear. Right, Glenn? Glenn, hello? Glenn, can you hear me? Glenn, these things do happen here. We only have about 5 minutes left. Glenn, okay, pick up the mic. No. Well, I guess Glenn just told you what his greatest fear was. He has something to say, and no one can hear him. That's his greatest fear. Actually, you know, that's pretty much what happens here. We actually come here to experience our fears, our doubts, our fears, anxieties, our worries. And, of course, whenever you pray not to have them, you just have more of the same. That's all. I will say thank you so much, Suzette, for sharing that thing on the children of God are entitled to perfect comfort from when they develop perfect trust. Last night, we just happened to have Maureen Stark here, and she was our guest teacher on Saturday night, and she gave us 135 places where the word trust is used in A Course in Miracles. I'm sure the one that you gave me is one of them. And anyone can go to the Peace of God and find one of the 135. We found it really a wonderful, wonderful way to hear Jesus speaking about trust, which, of course, is the bedrock of the teachers of God. Thank you so much, both Regia and Suzette. I'm going to turn this mic back to you, Regia and Suzette. The mic is all yours.
Hi, okay. Well, not sure what else to add. I do want to say that on our website, it's, if Doug would put it up, jsim.net, on our website, under at the top, under links, when you hit the links link, it opens up a sort of, what's it called, a springboard or whatever, I forget what the term is, but ACIM sites. When you go there and you hit links at the top of the page and then you go to ACIM sites, there's a link to Deep Waters and there's a link to the Father's Prayer and there's also a link to Suzette's website. And if you saw our newsletter last month, Suzette did the hearts and she has note cards available with Course in Miracle quotes. Also, you might want to suggest your favorite quote. And I believe Suzette could create a note card. So I hope you go there. Dev, I think, I'm not sure if you had put up Suzette's website link before, but it is on our website under links, under ACIM sites. And hoping to have some other articles in the future and definitely some artwork. I hope you go also to our blog. And that's when you go to JCIM.net, at the bottom lower right, you'll see a link to the blog. And Suzette's got all her artwork there on the left under ACIM artwork. So you get to see all of the, well, not all, but some of the cards that we put in on the blog. So invite you to go there. Also, always want to mention that if anyone has anything to that they'd like to submit to our newsletter or the blog, just send me an email. You can friend me on Facebook, Regia, Janaki Joy, or friend ACIM Original, and we'll take a look. All right, and I think that's it. Thank you so much, Dov. It was wonderful to be here.
Okay, thank you so much. I want to also thank Mads, who, of course, is here a lot for that wonderful song. Of course, Mads does a wonderful job in the recordings of the daily lessons that you guys send out. Thank you for posting on the Peace of God as you do, and also on Open Minds, which is our Facebook page. And I know I'll be seeing you in San Francisco, and Tom Whitmore and Carmen Cameron will be, of course, co-presenters at the conference, and we look forward to that. And so I'll see Regia and her husband. I think Daniel Tipton as well.